The Senate Judiciary and Public Safety Committee will come to order. For the record, it's Wednesday, April 27th, 2011. We have three bills up for our agenda, starting with Senator Latz, Senate File 728. May the record show we have a quorum. We had members check in earlier. Senator Latz, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman and members, thank you. Senate File 728 is a bill that would seek to place juveniles who need some detention in a juvenile facility rather than an adult facility. Particularly what you have now is there are some crimes where you have juveniles who are children, are certified to stand trial as adults to face the criminal charges that they're dealing with. But this is prior to trial and verdict. But where they are detained during that period of time is the big question. Under current law, they come into the system as a juvenile. As soon as they're certified as an adult, they end up going to the adult facilities to reside until their case is heard and resolved. That has posed some problems in terms of safety and otherwise that the Sheriff Stanek from Hennepin County thought was problematic. So I'd like to ask Sheriff Stanek to come forward as the leadoff batter the testimony today to explain why we think this change ought to be made. I will note from your files that the Sheriff's Association does support this bill. And I would also ask, just to get the bill into the shape that I'd like to see it in, there is an A1 amendment. This is the first stop for this bill.
The A1 amendment is an author's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Is it sheriff or representative or?
Commissioner, dad. They caught a lot worse. So thank you, Mr. Chair, members, for
Sheriff,
allowing
welcome,
me to be here.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members, my name is Rich Stanek, County Sheriff. Thank you, Senator Latz, for carrying this important piece of legislation for us. Mr. Chair, I'll be brief. I know you've got a busy agenda tonight, a lot of things coming and going. This bill is passed out of the House Committee. Not much discussion. We understand, though, that it's a different animal here in the Senate. It's a pretty simple, straightforward bill. It does four key things. One, doesn't cost the state any money, which is a good thing. Two, it saves money for the counties and our sheriffs. Three, saves money for local school districts. And fourth, it increases public safety by ensuring that youthful offenders who will be on the streets again get the best education possible while being shielded from the influence of older inmates. And Mr. Chair, members, the Hennepin County Jail, as you know, is about an 839-bed facility. We book about 40,000 people a year through the front doors. It's designed and staffed to detain individuals 18 years of age and older, which is really important. Our jail is the only American Correctional Association accredited facility in the state and has an average daily population of just shy of 700 adults who are awaiting trial or sentencing. And in 2010, we housed an average of six youthful under the age of 18 offenders in the jail at any given time. Under the current rules and regulations, Mr. Chair and members, when a juvenile is certified to stand trial as an adult, the juvenile is required to be kept in our adult jail until they face trial and sentencing. And Senate File 728 will allow judges and sheriffs the ability to house these juvenile offenders in a juvenile facility pending their trial and adjudication. And we've had, fairly broad-based support from Minneapolis School District, who's here tonight, certainly the chiefs and the sheriff's associations and others. Mr. Chair, members, that concludes my testimony, but I'm happy to take questions if required.
Sheriff Stanek, I had one question. Does this bill focus just on like EJJ kids, or is it all minors that would be held in detention?
Mr. Chair, members, you have to be certified to stand trial as an adult. So whatever the EJJ rules are when they kick in, that's the requirements.
All right. Any other questions? Hearing none. We have another witness, of course.
Yes.
Mr. Jim Grothwell.
Mr. Chair, members,
welcome to the committee.
Jim Grothwell, representing the Minneapolis Public Schools. It's not often I come before the Judiciary Committee. I'd like to thank the senator for bringing the bill forward, the sheriff for explaining it so well. This bill allows us to house and educate juveniles with juveniles rather than with adults. It's that simple. It's a much better educational environment for us as the Minneapolis Public Schools to offer an education program at the Juvenile Detention Center. This bill allows us to do that for these students and juveniles who are adjudicated as adults. We strongly support the bill and appreciate your support.
Okay. Any further discussion? Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to speak for or against the bill? Seeing none. Sarah Latz renews his motion, Senate File 728 as amended. Be recommended to pass and go to the floor.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Go to the floor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is adopted.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Which
was this easy?
Sarah Ingebrigtsen.
I didn't carry every bill I want.
Chair, members, I thought I'd lost my witness, but he's here.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Mr. Chair and members, I have before you Senate File 1162, and I do have a delete all in A1, an author's amendment, A1 amendment, if I could offer that at this time, please.
Senator Ingebrigtsen moves the A1 amendment as not an author's amendment. It would have to be considered independently. Could you explain the amendment? To our committee. I'm sorry. It is an author's amendment. Senator Ingebrigtsen, my apologies. The A1 amendment is before us. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Amendment is adopted.
Thank you,
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Mr. Chair and members. This bill originates, was carried, or a portion of this bill was carried last year by Senator Dibble for the Independent Community Bankers of Minnesota. And this is basically a cleanup bill, if you will, clarifying in statement the definition of a residential tenant. And was apparently overlooked, and with that, Mr. Chair and members, I will turn it over to Mr. Skilbred for an explanation, and I think it's pretty straightforward and it shouldn't take too long.
Right. Welcome to the committee. Would you identify yourself for the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. David Skilbred with the Independent Community Bankers of Minnesota. As Senator Ingebrigtsen said, we are amending a section of law that was included in a bill passed last year. That was authored by Senator Dibble. It was a long bill having to do with tenants and landlords. One small section of that law was MS 504B.285(1), which we are amending tonight. The bill, as amended, proposes a technical change which clarifies the definition of residential tenant. The bill is needed because the bill that we passed last year was, even though it was conforming language with federal law, the way we passed it last year, was ambiguous as to its definition of tenant, and therefore it could be read as if it applied to both tenants of residential properties and tenants of commercial properties. The intent of the law last year was to provide some protections to residential tenants living in residential properties that go into foreclosure. Unfortunately, we've had a circumstance where the ambiguity of the law was such that it was questioned whether or not it applied to commercial tenants in commercial buildings. So what we're trying to do tonight is tighten up the definition so that the intent of the law passed last year is preserved, but it doesn't spill over into the commercial tenant, commercial property area. That's all the bill does.
Okay. Any questions for the witness? Any further information, Senator?
Nothing further, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to speak for or against the bill? Is there anyone in the audience?
Mr. Neumeister has indicated he is here.
He's here. Hearing none, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion is adopted.
Thank
Senator,
you,
we have to redo this. I did not use the proper motion. Or were we adopting your amendment?
We already adopted.
That's right. Let's start this again. Senator Ingebrigtsen moves that Senate File 1162, as amended, be recommended to pass and proceed to the floor. Is that correct, Senator Ingebrigtsen?
That's correct.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members.
Senator Rest. Welcome to the committee, Senator Rest.
thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Tonight I bring you Senate File 1149, and Ms. Pontius is currently correcting an amendment that I would appreciate being offered. This is not the Committee of Original Jurisdiction, but I have worked with Ms. Pontius today, Transportation was, to put the bill in better order for consideration as a data practices policy issue changes for the Department of Transportation. And if I may, I will just explain the general sections of the bill, and then Peter Zuniga, who is the staff attorney in the Office of Chief Counsel of the Department of Transportation, can respond to particular details of the proposal, and by that time I hope that we would have the amendment before us. The bill contains sections that were brought as an agency bill to the Committee on Transportation, and proposes that we adopt some provisions with regard to data practices, first of all with the design build process that through which contracts are awarded in the Department of Transportation. There is a timeline and a filtering process that goes on in the design build process, where at certain choice points there are data either remains private and I don't use those words as technically as you all would, but where it at least it is not public data, and that there are choice points where data does become public. And the process that is described in the bill with regard to the first section will be dealing with those points at which the data becomes public data and the points at which it remains protected data because it's proprietary. Secondly, as I'm sure all of you are well aware, the Department of Transportation operates a Adopt-a-Highway program throughout the state on state highways, whereby families or organizations, Rotary Clubs, Lions Clubs, whatever, may gather volunteers and clean up that section of a highway that's been designated as sponsored by them. The department had been asked to provide, was asked to provide data about volunteers who had, who were part of that Adopt-a-Highway program, and they are asking that the to delineate what information that is collected about the Adopt-a-Highway volunteers, what information is public and what information is non-public. And so that is addressed in the bill as well. Then, as you may be aware, in 2007, for those of you that served on the Transportation Committee, we passed a bill signed by Governor Pawlenty that provided for a study of mileage-based user fees as a potential substitution, but as a pilot for the gas tax, to look at whether that is feasible, et cetera. And we, in the course of that, and what is proposed here is to make sure that the people who are currently volunteering to be part of that study, which will go on this summer, that information about those volunteers, those participants, I guess, I don't know their
participants.
Yeah, participants, that their data about them is not inappropriately released. And then the last section deals with accident report, crash report data. Right now, when the state patrol tags a car or a site where there has been a crash on a state highway, the Department of Transportation has access to that data because it is, or that information at that point, to determine whether there was damage to infrastructure that is monitored and overseen by the Department of Transportation. On occasion, however, on a state highway, a crash might be investigated and information provided by a local police force, and that information may not get reported if there was damage to MnDOT infrastructure, may not get reported to MnDOT. So what the proposal does generally is to allow MnDOT, working through DPS, to have access to crash data so that they can determine if, when other than State Patrol has investigated a crash, that they can look at the crash reports to determine whether there is not only damage to MnDOT infrastructure, but if there is some appropriate action that needs to be taken by the Department of Transportation to recover from a responsible party. With that, Mr. Zuniga. Mr. Zuniga is prepared to answer more specific questions than just my general explanation, and I'm hoping that Ms. Pontius, who has come back in the room, is prepared to give us the amendment that puts the bill in a more proper order.
Thank you, Senator Rest. Is there any questions for Mr. Zuniga? I might have a question. Mr. Zuniga, going to Section 5, apparently we'll be looking at an amendment that will give the Commissioner of Transportation access to reports for purposes of seeking restitution for damages to state-owned infrastructure. Do we do that now, or is this something new?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Peter Zuniga, Z-U-N-I-G-A.
Yes.
In the past, we have had access to those records as a party to the accident, but with DPS's interpretation of the law, they determined that we don't have access to all accident reports, only to those reports that involve damage to the MnDOT-owned infrastructure. In the past, what would happen is one of our employees would go over to DPS and look through all the reports and determine which reports involve MnDOT-owned infrastructure. When DPS determined that we don't have access to that, they also said we don't have the staff and resources to separate the accident reports that involve MnDOT-owned infrastructure and those that don't and that you're not a party to and you shouldn't have access to under the law. We've been working with DPS, and what we've determined is that the most efficient way for us to obtain that data is through their electronic database. DPS maintains a database of all accidents within the state. We currently have access to that database, but only for a limited purpose, which is accident analysis. What we are proposing is that we have access to determine the damage to state-owned infrastructure. What this does is it allows us to determine if there's infrastructure that's involved in a rural highway that we may not know about, whether it was a local law enforcement agency that responded to the incident. They don't necessarily report it to MnDOT, but it also creates an efficiency. Like I said before, we have to send an employee over. With a web-based application, our employees can sit down at their computer and access the database, run searches within it, and retrieve only those reports that have damage to MnDOT infrastructure. And it also eliminates the resource issue that Department of Public Safety has.
Do we have an amendment? I think members have gotten a pretty good idea of what the bill is about, but let's get the amendment before us. It would be the A5 amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ingrid.
If I could just ask him a couple questions. So to understand this, now you're not even able to have access from all law enforcement agencies if there is public damage to MnDOT infrastructure.
Yeah, like a guardrail or something.
Guardrails, yeah. And so this will allow you that opportunity. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senators,
Mr. Zuniga,
what this is doing is the system that we set up with DPS right now is that for only those accidents that we can identify, which is a state trooper leaving a yellow tag on the damaged infrastructure, and our maintenance folks driving by and pulling that tag, only then can we identify a particular accident number and request that specific accident report. Also, there are situations where we may not know about it because it was a local law enforcement agency that responded to the accident. So what we're proposing is that our access to this electronic database will allow us to identify the damage and then also seek restitution from the insurance companies.
Sir, in your presence.
Thank you. And a follow-up, Mr. Chair. So do you have any, maybe Senator, do you have any numbers of what we're going to be able to recover here? I think this is a great idea. Yep. There's a lot of damage being done out there that's not being reported properly, so we are all paying for somebody else's problem, somebody else's mistake. Do we have any idea how much we're losing here by not doing something like this?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Ingebrigtsen, that's an excellent question. I don't have that information. I do not know whether the fiscal analyst in the Transportation Committee where this began, requested a fiscal note or whether the Department of Transportation prepared any kind of analysis. And
Mr. Chair, Senator.
Mr. Zanigos.
Speaking only for the metro area and within, I'd say, the past year, we have sought restitution in the sum of $3 million, and we have recovered approximately $2 million. So projecting into the future, we would anticipate collecting approximately $2 million in restitution.
Yeah, thank you. And that's great. And Senator, I'm certain that it'd be pretty hard to put a price tag on how much we're going to be possibly collecting here from those accidents that just simply get overlooked. And when you start talking about guardrails and replacing them, I mean, they're very expensive, not only in the metro area but out in the rural area as well. So this seems to really make a lot of good sense.
Yeah. We have the A5 amendment. Is it the A5?
Mr. Chairman, yes, it's now the A5.
The A5 amendment is before us.
And, Mr. Chairman, also, too, I think the committee, the bill that you have in your packets is the introduced bill, and there's a first engrossment, and copies of that are coming as well. So, the A5 is one, is actually just sort of a technical stylistic amendment that I put together that basically just restructures the data classification that's in the first section. It just breaks down the paragraphs a little differently.
So, Council, Senate File 1149 that's in our packet, that's what, the original bill?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that's correct. So Transportation took out the first section and then added some other language to the data provisions.
All right.
And so the A5 amendment then is drafted to the first engrossment, which should be coming short. In fact, it's here now, so.
Mr. Chairman, as I had and Ms. Pontius had indicated, the substance of the bill is as I described and is reflected in the amendment as well and reflects Mr. Zuniga's comments.
All right. Why don't we move the A5 amendment? It's more of a technical nature anyway, getting it in the shape, rewritten in the style that we kind of require.
Mr. Chairman, and I have a question for Ms. Pontius. Did not the first engrossment already delete Section 1 of the bill? And so isn't Section 1 of the bill begin? I mean, do we need line 1.2? Because did you totally rewrite that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest. Yeah, what Section 1 of the bill is now this section, and rather than doing it as a page in line, because there were so many so this just replaces Section 1. So it takes it out and puts it back in.
All right, thank you. Just wanted to make sure it wasn't the section, you weren't referring to the Section 1 of the original bill, which had to deal with definition of personnel. That's not here.
Right. Yeah.
Council, is there anything in A5 that may be a substantive change, or is it just a technical rewrite?
Mr. Chairman, it's just a technical rewrite.
All right. Any questions on A5? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted. To the Senate File 1149, first engrossment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We are finished with our testimony. We understand that there's Mr. Neumeister would like to speak.
All All right. Senator Rest, I did have a question, and now I got to find it on the first engrossment. It was about the data that's collected and considered private for this mileage-based user fee data, the user fee data for the mileage-based experiment. Mm-hmm. There's a request that financial and credit data are involved in this, and I was just wondering from the department, why do we need to collect financial and credit data on those that are going to be the subjects of this fee data system?
Mr. Chairman, before he answers that, do you think I could have a copy of the first engrossment?
We'll get our Senate page on it right away.
Yeah. So I can follow along as well. It didn't get posted until late this afternoon. Thank you. So, Mr. Chairman, you are referring to...
This would be on page 3, line 10. The financial and credit data of these subjects that are part of this this survey.
Sure.
And... would just like to know why is the department, I can understand, well, I'm not even sure about the personal identification data, but I suppose anything collected by the government you need to protect under identification. But financial and credit data, is that part of the fields of data you're collecting for the mileage-based user fee system?
Mr. Chair, members, as part of the program and the way it's been set up is that we will provide the participants with a sum of money for which they will pay the user fee from. So our intent on including the financial and credit data was just to make sure that it covered that that data that or the money that we provide to them and where they locate it and how they're paying for it, which is a credit card or via check. That sort of thing.
When you're collecting data on individuals, or are you collecting data on individuals aside from the personal ID data, are you collecting their financial data outside of, let's say, the credit card you're going to give them? Are you going to review their credit histories in any way or collect any other data aside from the money that or the purchasing power that you will be giving these individuals?
Mr. Chair, members, to my knowledge, I don't think that we are. I think that's more of a question that our project manager can answer as far as exactly what type of data they'll be collecting on the individual.
Right. Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to speak?
And Mr. Chairman, these are people who are volunteering to participate, by the way.
Correct. All right.
I assume that they're fully informed.
Okay. Anyone else wishing to speak on the bill? Mr. Neumeister?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Welcome to the committee.
My name is Rich Neumeister. As always, the devil is in the details. Mr. Chairman, historically, the MnDOT data practices bill has been controversial because you have to read specifically sometimes between the lines and, from my perspective, get more information. Number one that I would like to ask the question, Mr. Chairman, I heard the word that this is a technical language or a rewrite in terms of what's public, or is it just technical based on what was introduced? So I'm trying to understand the word.
Mr. Chairman, it's a technical rewrite of the bill.
Of the bill, okay.
Yes, trying to make the language flow a little bit.
Right.
Mr. Newman.
Mr. Chairman, there are three sections that I wish to comment on. The first one is the design build. And one of the things I would like to comment on is what is new and what is not. In other words, if you take a look, you'll see subdivision 11 of data practices. They're deleting a lot of language, and then some of that is included in the new rewrite. But it is not clear to me what is new and what is not. At least from evaluating the bill, if you look where it says, currently under law, identifying information concerning the members of the technical review committee, the committee that looks at these proposals and decides the things, currently those names are public. Under their proposal, these names would not be public. So it's not too clear to me, and this is where in the memo I sent to you, there's some convolution from my perspective to try and enunciate what is new and what is not new. So I would ask that question. Secondly, the testimony on this particular section is for, because this involves millions of dollars of taxpayers' monies for roads, it's important for the accountability and transparency of that. So that's one thing. I think the names should be public for who's doing the evaluation, rather than wait until an award is done or even up to a year afterwards that the language does propose. The other question is, who are these members of this technical review, since we're going to make their names secret from what is being proposed now, and why? The other aspect of it, if you take a look on page 2 of the A5 or A4, which is very similar, in paragraph E, to me, is who makes the decision as to who rejects. It's a long time to keep some of this information non-public, up to a year possibly. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm just sharing with you some perspectives. This is generally current law, except they're adding some different kinds of things. I don't know, you know, if it changes some time periods. At least I know the names, and I don't know the rationale for that. So I don't know if you want to take section by section, or I can continue on.
Continue on.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, the next section that I have concern about would be the mileage-based user fee data. This was part in 2007, $5 million was granted from trunk highway bonds to do a revenue mileage study. One of the issues that this involves is issues of transparency, accountability, and privacy. Let me at least speak to the accountability and transparency aspect to it. $5 million is going to be spent on a major policy and recommendations that are going to be coming to you. The concern I have is that they have two broad perspectives called field data, including road usage data, and vehicle identification data, which would never be public. And field data, you can put whatever field data is. When a report like this is of such magnitude, the public wants to be able to know how you got from A to Z. What were some of the individual kinds, you know, the individual situations? Let's say in the county, Mr. Chairman, that Senator Ingridson is from. A person, you know, has to do so much mileage. And so maybe there's not a bridge, that so they have to go through a particular way to get to a certain point. So they might have to go 67 miles because of that. And so if there was a bridge built in between, it would be, you know, or whatever, it might be kind of different. So you want to be able to see where, because this is going to be where revenue is going to be, you want to be able to see how they come up with these figures to why they may recommend that they should go to a revenue mileage tax. Also the kind of vehicle, the kinds of roads, you know, the dynamics of the area, you know, the characteristics of these volunteers in terms of where they live. When you take a look at studies from Oregon and other kinds of places that have done this, that is information that the public wants to see what reasons why and those kinds of things. With this language, I see where the department MnDOT and say, we're not going to give any of that to you, even if it's non-identifiable data. And then on top of that, what they put, oh, we'll give summary data, but then they can charge for summary data. And that's the other concern I have. Generally, when you want to inspect data, let's say if it identifies somebody, you can say, take off the identifier and give me the rest of the data. Here, I don't see that happening. I see where MnDOT may be able to say, I'm sorry, but that's field data, and we can't give that to you. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm looking for the accountability, transparency of that aspect. Number two, Mr. Chairman, if this does become a policy that you want to start doing revenue mileage, And even for the 500 folks, it's important that you know that this is going to be GPS-based data. This is going to be where you go, what time, maybe what kind of road. I mean, I don't know in all detail. Now, location data is very important to people, law enforcement in particularly. And one of the things that I would suggest is that if you take a look at current law and in other parts of our law, and I'm borrowing this concept from State Statute 152.126, Subdivision 6, Paragraph Number 7, which basically says that if law enforcement wants this data, they have to basically have a search warrant, which I think is very important. Generally, under data practices, if an entity wants certain kinds of data, it can just get a court order. And there are different kinds of court orders, as you know. And in those instances where we believe that it's important for privacy of individuals, we have put on a search warrant. So I would like to suggest that. Mr. Chairman, may I continue on?
Certainly.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, Section 5, I think, is where the devil in the details come into play. And there are some basic givens that I think that is important to understand. The reason why we do accident reports, which is different than a police report.
Mr. Neumeister, due to the first engrossment, you're referring to Section 4 now for our members.
Okay. I'm sorry? Okay. And you're correct. Okay. Section 4, it's important to be aware of why this law came into play. Basically, the feds want accident reports to take a look at how, for accident analysis. All the states do this. And one of the things that the states do, they say to the public and through the government, we want you to be totally honest with the accident. And if you take a look on following on the page, you'll see all the protections of immunity that can't be used for certain kinds of things. I mean, where you have decided to do that. So it's always been the policy that this is, we want this information, it's for this purpose only. Now, if you take a look, again in Section 4, real quick, and you go down to where it says Subdivision 13, and you take a look at Paragraph 1, it basically will say that a person, which is basically the government entity, can go for property of a loss, you know, by virtue of the accident or damage or whatever. There are other points in here that I think that articulate that perspective. What you're doing here, because of maybe they have been illegally getting that kind of information, and now all of a sudden they find out that's happening. And it's probably only for a small percentage of accidents, because a lot of the accidents are probably documented and they probably get those kinds of things. Now we're going to allow them, the MnDOT, to rifle through every accident report without any kind of specific information. What percentage that is, I don't know. But it does seem that there has been a process where they have been able to go with specific information and get that. Now, I don't know what the figures or amount of money are. You know, that's another perspective. But I know that the state of Minnesota has done a policy that we want you to be honest, Mr. Citizen or Miss Citizen, when you come in an accident, and none of this stuff is going to be used against you. Now, if MnDOT does this, how many other kinds of roads or things or where there's damage, because you're putting this in, and maybe it was hidden and nobody really knew about it, and now because Department of Public Safety decided, yeah, we looked at the law, and maybe we've been giving it out in the bad. Now, if we allow this exception for MnDOT, who's going to come in next? What county that where they don't have an accident report? What, you know, down the line? And so you promise the citizens of Minnesota, be honest with your accident reports, and now all of a sudden, this is where the beginning starts to happen, the increase or the ability of that. The other aspect of it, again, because maybe some illegality or under the table or maybe a misreading of law that allowed them to rifle through broad information. I don't know. I'm not too familiar yet with that process because I just heard some of this discussion last night. We're going to have to change the Tennyson warning. The Tennyson warning is now for restitution or damage or whatever. This will be allowable to be able to be used for these kinds of purposes. Now, how many people may that decide, well, you know, I'm not going to be totally honest in this accident report? Because I know now it might be used for other things. And down the line, what may it go into? So, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think I've been able to articulate some concerns to look at carefully. The first section that I talked about, I think that, you know, it's basically, I would like to suggest the names be public. Number two, I am suggesting that maybe there should be an amendment that says only based on a search warrant basis. And number two, some clarity of language that that some information is available to the public after this report is done and it's not hidden in a way. And Mr. Chairman, Section 4, I think, should be deleted. I think it's an important one to think about and to get more information if you choose not to do that. Because once you let one exception in, because maybe the exception was granted under the table or a misreading of law or whatever, how you want to characterize it, because the public really didn't know about it. I think now when it comes out into the open, there's going to be other folks down the line. So that's the kind of aspect, and I've tried to put it in a realm of direct understanding with the policy that I think you choose to do.
Any questions for the testifier? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you,
sorry.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Neumeister, just in general, do you agree with the concept that I think the bill is trying to address, that whoever damages public property should have to, in one way or another, pay for it? And my second question is it your belief that MnDOT or law enforcement would have to obtain this information with a search warrant before MnDOT was able to make a claim against the parties involved?
Mr. Neumeister?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, the first one, or the last question you asked, is very easy. I wasn't referring to the accident report data. I was referring to the GPS data under the revenue mileage, which a number of states have done. Supreme Courts, Court of Appeals are starting to say that location data has a higher threshold than just using an administrative subpoena or a basic court order. So that's where that proposal, that suggestion. The other one, for me, I have always felt this, and this is the policy of the legislature for 35 years under the Minnesota Government Data Practices Act. You use data for one purpose, and there's all kinds of things that we ask people to do to be able to share information. But it's for that purpose. And there's a lot of those things out there, databases or whatever. But what happens then, people look at it as a honeypot of things, of the hive. And what happens then, people then start to say, this is some nice data that we could use for all kinds of things. And there could be some legitimate reasons to do that. There are some of those reasons I disagree with, and I will come up here and make my case and my perspective on that, and to make it clear to policymakers, this is the kind of decisions you're going to have to make. But then what happens when you do this thing, there is some reaction on the other thing. So, Mr. Chairman, on this particular one, I think the policy is for 30-plus years, you've been asking for the state of Minnesota folks to be honest in their accident reports, which is different than a police report. because it's a specific kind of thing and which you have given a lot of protections on, and it can't be used for all these things, and now all of a sudden it's going to be above board kind of use for at least MnDOT, and then for me is what's going to be the next, and then you're going to have to inform people that this is not just going to be for accident analysis. Then the issue is, are people going to be more upfront and direct in the things that can be used on the accident? Because as you could, if you even look on the page, it says it can't be used for any, you know, civil suits, criminal things, or whatever. So that's, you know, one of the unique premises that you're asking.
So just to follow up, real quickly then, so would you agree that the accident and the restitution, if there should be any, all would be the same act?
I didn't understand
the
that.
Accident, the accident and the state of Minnesota to be able to recover their loss would all be the same act, be the same report, one incident.
Mr. Neumeister.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I'm sort of confused by the question. The current process, let's just say if you're literally reading the law and that we didn't have what was done, a past practice, which has been brought to light because the council, chief counsel of DPS has said, hey, we're not going to do it anymore, is basically the MnDOT or whoever could say, hey, this accident happened, we'd like to have the time and date or whatever to be able to get this information. And I'm not too clear what the process has been with DPS. I've heard two things. I've heard that they have gotten the stuff for them, and that number two, that they've had employees go over and look at specific reports or rifle through some reports because DPS may not have the staff. I don't know that. So the thing is, at least the literal reading of the law for me is, if they have some information, they go to the DPS and say, hey, this happened between here and there, can you give us the report or whatever, rather than them all of a sudden just rifle through a number of reports. So I'm trying to answer the question the best I can, but Mr. Chairman and Senator Ingebrigtsen, the bigger question is, this happens with MnDOT, who are the next folks? And that's a policy judgment the legislature is going to have to make.
Mr. Chair, just another quick, real quick follow-up. So maybe it would be easier to explain a single incident, a single report. Somebody who lost some property is included in that report, and that would be the state of Minnesota or the county of Douglas, whoever owns the property that's damaged. If they were part of that report, that's the end of the discussion. That now is going to become available to the person who lost, or the entity that lost the report, lost the monetary damage. Would that tighten it up better?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I think that is already basically the law. As much as I understand, if MnDOT or whoever can say, hey, you know, this is part of our property, and you know, we want to try and get an institution that they can do a written request to DPS and say, I'm interested, you know, in specific. Again, I'm not too familiar with the process, but I'm just learning some aspects of it based on testimony I heard when this came up for discussion last night in the other body hearing, and then today. The issue is, you know, I think, what's the percentage that they're looking at to where they have to rifle and they can't go through the process that's now being done? I'm just, Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, and members of the committee, I think I've hoped to articulate in broad terms some of the policy choices. You know, to get into what DPS does and the relationship to MnDOT, I don't know. You know, at least I can only share with you in general what I've heard. But I think there's the bigger question is, do you want to allow access or not, particularly with a longstanding policy?
Mr. Neumeister, if I could bring your attention to page 3, line 16
through 19.
Are we talking about
first engrossment?
First engrossment.
It spells out what the Commissioner of Public Safety's responsibility is for data on confidential reports. On line 316, Commissioner of Public Safety and other appropriate state, federal, county, and municipal government agencies for accident analysis purposes.
Right.
It doesn't say criminal investigations or any other search. So that's the purpose designated under existing law.
That's correct.
And then as we look at the new language, then its focus shifts to the Commissioner of Transportation. For the use of the Commissioner of Transportation, and then we spell out the purposes there, for purposes of seeking restitution for damages to state-owned infrastructure. I think that's a limiting purpose. And I also believe that the data that, or the pages of existing law, reflect the state's desire to keep information on individuals, personal or private. And I think this is a narrow definition of purpose, but it doesn't go anywhere close to expanding the role of the departments, either one of them, into a criminal investigation. And since it is considered private data, wouldn't that necessitate a search warrant anyway?
No, Mr. Chairman, I think it's very important that search warrant is based on the revenue mileage issue, not on this issue. And that's the question that Senator Ingebrigtsen asked. So we're not talking about a criminal investigation at all in Section 4. The search warrant issue is with the revenue mileage. Completely separate, completely different.
Mr. Zuniga, could I ask you a question? Maybe you could help clarify. Is the department, will they be collecting data or mileage-based user data based on GPS signaling, or is it on an odometer to follow the mileage?
Mr. Chair, members, participants will be provided with a smartphone, and it will collect the GPS information from the smartphone.
All right. And the intent of the bill that you understand, is it to keep all of that data private?
Correct. Mr. Chair, members, our intent is to balance the privacy interests of our participants. We don't want to discourage anyone from participating for the fear that we're going to release their private data, whether we're going to release where they're going, how fast they're going, at what time they're going, what route they're taking. But also we have to balance the transparency issue that Mr. Neumeister talked about. We heard some of his concerns last night, and right now what we're trying to do is we're trying to make that balance, protecting individuals' privacy interests versus the transparency of the government.
Mr. Zuniga, if law enforcement came and knocked at your door and said one of your subjects in your test, we suspect, may have used their car in the commission of a crime, and we'd like to look over your data to see if that individual was sitting outside the bank doors for 20 minutes, letting the car idle, and at least it would identify at least the car to the crime scene. Would you release that information to law enforcement, or do you think that's something that a warrant would be necessary to get?
Mr. Chair, members, we would not release that data to law enforcement. Right now it would be classified as private data. Under the definition of private data, the data is only accessible to the subject of the data and no one else. So we would not provide it to law enforcement. Law enforcement could go to a court, get a court order to produce that data. But what we would do is, and what we've done in the past, is we'd make a motion to quash it. Part of the judge's analysis is the data discoverable under the rules of evidence, under the rules of civil procedure, criminal procedure? That's the first step in the judge's analysis. Once he reaches that conclusion, if the data are in fact discoverable, The next analysis the judge has to engage in is, does the privacy interests of the entity or the individual outweigh the benefit of producing the data?
Thank you. Ms. Pontius, do you have any contrary information to what the witness or the testifier just said regarding the relationship of private data and the necessity to have a search warrant to have law enforcement open up private data in a case that
I described? Mr. Chairman, I think he was giving you the rules under the Data Practices Act for getting access to private data, which is different than getting a search warrant. Which I think was Mr. Neumeister's point.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Yes, Mr.
Zinn. The provision of the Data Practices Act that allows a government agency to oppose discovery of not public data can be found at 1303 subdivision 6. And also, I think it's important to note that we are willing to insert language that requires a search warrant for law enforcement personnel.
Okay. Where is this bill going after this committee? I'm sorry?
Nowhere.
Oh, nowhere.
I mean, no, to the floor.
We have a motion.
Sorry. No, this is the final stop in terms of the committee process.
All right.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Neumeister?
Mr. Chairman, if you could just indulge me in just a moment or two, because you asked me a question, and there was a mixture of confusion of the two sections, and I wanted to make very clear that the search warrant is the revenue. Section 4 is the accident report data, and I wanted to answer the question where you said is for the use of the Commissioner of Transportation for the purpose of seeking restitution for damages to state-owned infrastructure limited. Sure, it could be limited in this instance, but we're making an exception in a 30-year-old law that we have never done before. And so who's going to be the next entity that's going to ask for information that you ask citizens to be very honest about, and where you say it can't be used for criminal procedures, it can't be used for civil procedures, to track down people who may own money? And so, then the opposite effect may be when people know by the Tennyson warning it can be used for other purposes, they may decide, you know, I'm not going to fill this out. Maybe I'm not going to be honest, which was for the other purpose, which is for traffic analysis. That's the issue. And I think, granted, it's limited now, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, but who's going to want access to the honeypot of data that for 30 years you've said is only going to be used for this purpose? Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, but particularly you, Mr. Chairman, you know the history. Once people start banging on the door, particularly over electronic data, a lot of folks are going to come. So that's the only concern I have, and it's a policy judgment, and I've tried to articulate as best as I can some of the principles that you're going to have to make a judgment on.
But Mr. Neumeister, I cannot see where anyone would be sharing this data since it's private data. It's as private as our driver license information, and there has been attempts, of course, to gain access to it, but they have to come through this committee.
Okay.
And over many years, it's been a protected status.
Well, Mr. Chairman, then I may ask yourself, if you get a notice, we want you to be honest about your accident, how it happened, every detail, and all those kinds of things. And you're told now, you've been told for the last 30 years, we're only going to use this for accident analysis. It cannot be used to collect any damage from you, anything or whatever that says in the law. And now you're going to be told, you know, it now may be released to MnDOT. Or next year, what's the next entity? I think you're not going to get the true purpose of why this language and why you wanted it. And so, I mean, that's the policy judgment you're going to have to make.
Mr. Chair, if I may make a comment.
Yes, Mr. Zinniger.
If you look under the same statute, 169.09, subdivision 5, there is a requirement that the property owner be notified of the damage to their property. Mr. Neumeister's concern with the Tennyson warning, if you're now including a purpose that the data is going to be shared with MnDOT, it's also putting the person involved in the accident on notice that they do have this requirement to report the damage to MnDOT. And if we can accomplish that, people becoming aware of this obligation, it may eliminate our need to access the accident reports and start searching for them.
Any other discussion? Sir Neumeister, the department offered language to include a search warrant provision. Would you be satisfactory with that?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm aware that they are working on that, and that's something for that section. I've always supported that. I'm still pushing. As you know, there's two bodies on clarity and to make sure that transparency and accountability for the revenue mileage report is done. Yeah, of course. I mean, I'm still going, you know.
Sarah Rest, do you have any comment about that?
Mr. Chairman, if the department is amenable to search warrant requirement with regard to the revenue study, the mileage revenue study, that I certainly don't have any objection.
Council, I gave you a quick speedball to write something up, and I was wondering if what your attempt was on.
Well, Mr. Chairman, at least this is a placeholder, if nothing else, for the language, but it would be on page 3, line 11, after the period insert, notwithstanding section 13.03, comma, subdivision 6, comma, a law enforcement agency may obtain access to data that are not public under this subdivision only pursuant to a search warrant based upon probable cause.
Okay. Any discussion on that amendment? Senator Rest?
We support it.
Okay. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Could somebody articulate to me why law enforcement would want this information? I'm sorry, I'm just not following this.
I think, well, Senator Neumeister, could you answer your I called you a senator. I'm sorry today. Sorry about that. Mister. Heavy on the Mister. Neumeister.
Please be brief.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, why law enforcement would want that is what Senator Limmer, Chairman Limmer articulated. People sometimes location data can be important for certain kinds of things, but also there's a privacy interest in that. I can't articulate it anymore other than, you know, where, who, where, what, where you go.
Any other discussion? Everyone understand the amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The amendment is adopted. Senate File 1149 is before us. Any further discussion? Anyone else in the audience that wishes to speak to or against the bill? Hearing none. All those in favor? Oh, I'm sorry. Senate. Senator Marty moves that Senate File 1149 as amended be recommended to pass and go to the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Rest. Thank you, members.
Time to be the end of the day.
1 o'clock tomorrow. We'll see everybody. More fun.
Mr. Chair, would that be here?
Yes. Room 15. Meeting is adjourned.
There'll be lunch.